Namaste and in La Catch. I'm Zen Benefiel, your host for One World, and welcome to this edition. I'm not going to go into reframing those phrases. You're going to have to find those on your own. They're really cool, and I suggest you use them in your life because they really make a difference. So this episode, we're going to be entertained by Dr. Terrence Johnson, who is the co-founder of iProgress. He's a writer, a public speaker, an innovator, a licensed professional counselor, and a former professor at Mississippi College. Now, he's got a doctorate in counseling. He's also got a master's in science counseling, or a master of science in counseling. So he's going to be a really interesting character to speak with today. Terrence, glad to have you here.
Glad to have the invite and be on your program. So, look, I appreciate it.
Well, it's exciting to talk to people like you that have a rich life that can share stories and really provide details of the integration and the inspiration and all those kinds of things that make it real, right?
Yeah.
Because we can think one thing, but unless we make it real, it really doesn't matter. It's like dreaming, right?
Right.
Dream, goals are dreams with deadlines, they say.
Right.
So, you know, we launch into a lot of different areas of development and inspiration and insight and investigation into how others have experienced their inner development initially in life and what they've been able to do with that long term in their professional lives as well. So without any further ado, how did you find your initial connection, and what was that like? Where were you at in life?
So I guess I go 2 points. So one point, I think with the first half of my career, I think being a helper, that came naturally to me. I tell people have always talked to me all my life, would just come up and tell me things about them. Even when I was little, like adults would just come in to me. I was like, I don't know what you want me to do with this, but people just felt comfortable talking to me. And I realized that there was a reason for that. I didn't know my role in it, but I just knew it was something that I needed to do with it. But also, I've always been somebody that enjoyed stories. Like my mom would tell you, even when I was little, I used to read the newspaper like 2 years old or something. I just loved to read. And I carried that all throughout my life. I was like the book festival, like number one customer, like the book.
Like Lamar says, right? You know, reading is essential.
Right. And I loved it. I think one of my favorite books was James and the Giant Peach. And it's like, I was reading it and I could see it, you know, I could see like all that stuff visually. And I love films. I love images. And so I think for me, one of the guiding images for me is the crossroads. And so I think for the inner part of me, that came around maybe 6 years ago. And that was when I was kind of doing a shift. I was just bad at taking care of myself, okay. Like a lot of people.
Well, was this a shift to the inner, or just a final recognition that, yeah, that part of your life has been there?
I think both, but I think for, at the time, what was going on, like my dad was sick for a number of years, so I was taking care of him, but also I was shifting out of a role of like being a professor and doing that and trying to see like what was next or what was my next, you know, assignment to do in life. And I started doing nature walks. And I think that ties back to like when I was growing up, I was a Boy Scout. And it was
Did you make it to Eagle Scout?
I didn't make it. I was like Weblo. I have a cousin that's a Eagle Scout. Well,
what? We're brothers then. That's how far I went. I became a Weblo, and that was about it. I got involved with other stuff.
Yeah. So I remember that first time we went like and did the overnight camps and stuff. And it was like time slowed down in nature, and just something about it just feels like home. And so I think me doing the nature walks, when I, you know, fast forward when I was older, like me returning back to that. But I was walking one day and on the trail, and I was going on a different part of it, and I saw this guy like going across the street. I was like, where did it go? Let me just see where it go. And so I came to a crossroad where I go left or I go right. So I went right, and then like guy started talking to me. And he's like, look at the tree. You call in like a heavy wooded area. Like, what you want me to see with the tree? Like, well, it's trees everywhere. Like, what you want me to see?
Go hug him.
And then
first of all,
I remember, right? It was a tree. Yeah. But the tree that fell, and you know, a tree that falls, it kind of starts to decay and starts to die. He's like, go over to the tree. I'm like, what you want me to see about the tree? He was like, you know, touch it, like, that's what I want you to do. I want you to catch people before they die to their purpose. And the tree was like representative of people, but it was representative of me, because I was dying internally because I was doing something that didn't feel right for me anymore.
Right. And that's interesting how you paid attention to the voice. And I think that this voice we all have.
Right.
Right. And some are in denial of it. Some listen to it a little bit. Others, like yourself, are more attentive to that connection and take that to a new level, right? Where you actually integrate it into your life and you pay attention.
Yeah, because it was, so I'm going to share this, and I haven't really shared this on podcast before, but it all connect. So
awesome.
Backtrack a couple years before that, and like in that situation, I just said, that was probably the clearest I've ever heard God or however anybody frames it. But before then, I got a snapshot of that when I was counseling somebody. It was this lady that came in, and her son had passed maybe like a year or so ago. And she was still grieving. She's like, well, everybody wants me to move on, but I don't want to give up my connection with my son. You know, it's like, it's still taking me longer. I think she cared for him and she was there when he passed or whatever. And so we were talking, and as we were talking, like, I could hear her son telling, like, tell my mom I'm okay. And I was like, what? I was like, okay, wait, no, that's not what I just heard.
Truth be told, that's just a phenomenal moment. And truth be told, you know what the label that science puts on that, if you will? Necromancy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's supposed to be not a good thing.
Right.
Right? And yet, here it's so natural, and it comes from that place of just wanting to be there in helpful service to another. So how could that possibly be wrong?
Right. But for me, in the moment, I was like, okay, I'm trying to like not validate in the sense like, is it right or wrong?
But well, you're
like,
probably trying to understand what the heck's going on.
Right. Yeah. But then I'm like, okay, well, how do I frame this to give it to the mom that doesn't freak her out? Because I don't want to say like, hey, your son talking to me and he said, hey, you know, right. I'm like, I didn't want to do that.
Yeah, that's an immediate cause for dismissal, right?
Right. So she was, you know, she was upset, she was crying. And I was like, you know, the way I framed it, I said, well, the way you talk about your son, I know you loved him, he loved you. And I was like, just because it's not a physical connection doesn't mean you have to totally separate from him. And I'm like, I think I just acknowledged like the feeling that I had in the moment, because I could feel it. Like, you could feel it in the room, but it was something that I had not really experienced in a counseling setting. And like I said, I don't know what it was about. Maybe it was her and just that connection she had with her son, and that kind of made it available in the environment, or just I was open to it. I don't know the whole mix of it.
Well, is it possible that maybe you were just in love and service and you became vulnerable enough and quiet because you didn't know how?
Right.
right? And so you became kind of vacant. Your cup was empty,
mm-hmm.
right? And it was able to be filled in that place of vulnerability because you were open to it.
Right, right. But in that moment, after she, I guess because I not just framed it right, but I honored it, it gave her something that she needed. And I think it gave her the sense that she could still have her son, even mm-hmm. though he wasn't here physically. And I think everybody else was trying to get her to move on and push her. And it's not that I didn't acknowledge like her moving on with her life, but it was, you can still have your son along with the growth that you're going forward with.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's been my experience, as bizarre as this may sound, kind of weird. I love being weird. The physical attachments that we have to people in life transcend death and cause the grief,
mm-hmm.
right? Rather than understanding that that connection is still there, even though there is no physical representation of it. It's in your heart, it's in your mind, it's in your soul, right? Because you were connected. And it doesn't have to leave. Now, the difference is that we pay too much attention to the outer life. We live half inside and half outside. Let's just start there, right? And so we get caught up in the outer life and forget about the inner one that's connected to everything.
Yeah.
And has no boundaries in that respect, right? Yeah. You can, you know, talk to your son, your grandma, your great-grandparents, mother, father, whatever. And it's just as simple as imagining their face or even thinking about them and just talking to them. And, you know, people will get varied responses depending on how vulnerable they are trying to answer their own conversation in their mind, right? You got to learn how to shut up. And yeah. listen, which yeah. you did. So tell me more.
Yeah. So as you were talking, it made me think about, so two of the most important people in my life have passed. My grandfather's been about almost 11 years since he passed. My dad has been a year since he passed.
Ooh.
And so
dads are tough.
Yeah. And so that's been a new journey for me. One thing, I always seek meaning in everything. And it's
good,
like,
place to start,
right? It's like, what's the lesson? Because for me, I don't mind, you know, difficult times or pain, as long as I understand what the pain is for. Like, once I get to that, and you know, you don't get that like immediately, but if you allow it to present itself, then it's like, got it. That's why I went through that. Got it.
It gives you the challenge to grow stronger.
Right.
And gain understanding by doing so.
Right. Right. So with my grandfather, it was like a push for me to get more involved at church and involved spiritually, because that's what he was like, a corner, like a pillar in our church.
Mm-hmm.
So after he passed, and I remember his funeral. It's like, I've never been to a funeral where I was motivated, because I heard all these people talk about my grandfather, like what he did and how he inspired them and motivated them, encouraged them. It's just like story after story. And I was looking around like, when did he do all this? Because he was just always with us, like me and my cousins and everybody else. So like, when did he have time to do all this stuff with these other people? Because he was always around with us. And I remember after the funeral, I was like, I need to do better. Like I really need to, you know, serve. Yeah, I need to serve more. And so I really did a lot more in the church. And I was diligent in it. But also I wanted other people to know about him. And so from that, and it came from a conversation me and my cousin had about my grandfather, and we just talk about stuff he told us, like lessons that he shared with us, and they were different for each one of us. He's like, well, granddad used to tell me this. Now I'm like, well, granddad used to tell me this. And I'm like, well, he didn't tell me that, you know, it was different.
But
like
jealousy going on there, huh?
Yeah, like he knew us, but he always used to talk to me about family, like take care of your family, all that kind of stuff. So a lot of stuff he used to do, I picked up. So a lot of stuff he did in church, how he used to make sure my grandmother was good, I took up that. And from there, one thing he was big on, and that's why, like, me and my cousin, like, all of us got, like, degrees and all that kind of stuff, because education was big. Like, we couldn't play, cut the TV on, anything, till everybody got their homework done, like, every day.
So, that's one of the things I find missing in America today, and that's critical thinking, right? And you can't, the educational capacity that's there, that kids just, for whatever reason, don't take advantage of, and their parents don't encourage them. Maybe they weren't encouraged.
Right. But
we really have a that's like our, from a social standpoint, that's our national deficit.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, having an expectation on it too. Because, like, it was an expectation. Not only are you going to do your work, you're going to do it well. You know, you're going to do it.
You're going to do it right.
Yeah, you're gonna do it well. And that's one thing that stuck with us, all of us, but I wanted to carry that forward. So I started a scholarship fund through our church to, like, give back to the kids that were graduating and give them scholarship money. We'd do, like, events every year for them and, you know, celebrate them, make sure that they know that people are seeing what they're doing and want to support them. Yeah, and care. Yeah,
the village is raising the children.
Right. And so I did that for a number of years while I was still here. And it was a labor of love. I can say that. Wasn't the easiest thing to do. Oh, but every year, just to see, you know, the parents enjoyed it, the kids enjoyed it, and it was something everybody looked forward to every year, which I was thankful for. Now with my dad, that's still an ongoing journey because it's fresh, and it's not that it was unexpected, because he was sick for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was just I wasn't expecting it to happen then, and then every time he had been in the hospital, I had been there. This was the only time I wasn't at the hospital.
Oh man, yeah, that's tough. I know my it's I'm coming up on 10 years Christmas Eve morning.
Wow.
And I, you know, was orphaned and adopted as a kid. So this was my adoptive father that I was really, really close to. And I think, you know, part of that's because we were both water signs. He was Piscean, I'm Cancer. And I just always felt him. He was always seemed to know when to pick up the phone and call me. Right. Mm-hmm. And when he passed, he'd had Parkinson's, gotten horrible with it, wheelchair combined, got to the point where he could barely even talk. And he had told my mother, who had dementia, that he would not put her in an assisted living center as long as he could take care of her. So it got to the point where he couldn't. And they finally went in. My sister talked him into going in after he had an episode. And 3 weeks later, he was gone. He's like, okay, mom's safe. I'm out of here. Right. And I didn't realize how connected I was. I was devastated. I thought I knew it was coming. Mm-hmm. Right. And I thought, yeah, I'll be able to handle this, man. It was tough. And so I can empathize with how that transition was for you too. Is the reason I said that.
Yeah. No, I appreciate it. Yeah. It's been, so I'll tell you, like, I'll say it like this. It was a gift from it, but it wasn't what I was expecting. Well, I didn't anticipate this gift beforehand, but I did get this gift. So after he passed, like, I have a sister. We didn't grow up together. And we would just text, you know, on holidays, just say, hey, you know, how you doing or whatever, but we never really
talked. I got a younger sister like that too.
and so, you know, we don't have the same mother, and she's about 8-9 years older than me.
Hmm.
But at the funeral, that was our time to reconnect. And, like, I remember we were riding, like, in the limo, and we were just doing stuff. And, you know, I was just looking down, we were just talking. I was like, yeah, this is my sister. So from there, we really made it a point, like, look, we're gonna have a relationship now. after this, and we're gonna really put effort to it. So now every Sunday, me and my sister talk. And what it's done for me is giving me something that I didn't have, because I grew up as an only child and I always wanted a sibling. And so it's like, now I got a gift that I didn't know I needed, but it came at the right time that I did need it. So I had somebody to walk through the grief with that understood fully what I was going through. And I didn't have to filter myself. And some days we get on the phone like, well, this week rough for you? Like, yeah, a rough one too. It's like, so we'll go through it. But just like what you were saying, as far as like even dream stuff too, I've had several dreams about my dad since then. And that's been the one thing. I had one about a month ago. And you know, you wake up, you realize that like, man, this is the only way I can physically like see him, you know, now, is if it's through a dream. And it feels so real. I woke up, I'm like, oh man, like I'm back in reality. Yeah. And so it's like that bittersweet kind of feeling. It's like, it's not that he's gone and I don't think about him and we don't mention him in conversation, but the presence of him, I think that's the thing that I miss the most.
Oh yeah, the physical side, because we're eternal beings, right? We're always available. We may, you know, have different personalities and different bodies across the timeline of whatever that is, right? And yet there's this, well, like you said, it's kind of a disappointment when you wake up, right? Because you were there and it's like, oh man, no, I've had a few happen with my dad as well. And what was really impactful to me, the morning he died, I'm in Arizona, he was in Indiana, and I was standing in the kitchen and I felt him hug me. And I recognized his energy, right? Yeah. And man, I became a sobbing invalid. Mm-hmm. At that point, I was just so overcome by it, and yet had hoped for it too, right? Because I know how the inner worlds work and that there's some bleed over that occurs between the two. Mm-hmm. So to have that experience on a visceral level was just out of this world, right? And I couldn't contain myself. The sobbing, it wasn't from grief. It was just the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing stuff. Have you had any of those kinds of things happen? Because I know just from what you're saying, you're like teetering on the edge of those, you know, those worlds. So in a sense, you're kind of a bridge between the two.
So not in the sense of the like that hug and embrace thing, but when you said that, it was a conversation that me and my sister had. And you know, she had less contact with my dad than I did. So I had a lot more of those moments than she did. And I remember we were talking, she was like, I wish I could hear him, you know, I wish he would tell me like if he was proud of me or not or whatever. So like fast forward a week.
That's a question you really need. Isn't that funny how as sons, we always want to make our parents proud. And even when we've done everything imaginable to do so, still wonder.
Yeah. And like for her, that's a question. Like for me, I heard it over and over again from him. But for her, she hadn't. So the next time we talked, she like, guess what? She like, I had a dream about dad. And he was like, he was talking to her kids and all that kind of stuff. And he was like, you know, I'm proud of you. And I was like, see, I'm like you, we just talked about that. And he said it to her. But for me, I had an instance. So I love A Christmas Story. That's like my favorite Christmas movie. And, you know, they did a new version that was on HBO Max. I think it came out like Thanksgiving Day or something like that. So I woke up. I was like, well, let me check it out. And, you know, as you're going through that process, you don't know what's going to trigger you, what's going to, you know, cause a reaction to you.
Right. And yet you're
so open. Right. And so I started watching it. And you know, in the movie Ralph, it was little. Now Ralph had like his own family and all that. So it starts off with the dad dying. It's like, oh great, you know. But it wasn't the fact that it was dad, it wasn't that bad, but it was parallel in that movie to me. Mm-hmm. So the mom in the movie wanted him to write up something about his dad because he's a writer. And he'd been trying to get his writing career off the ground. So he eventually like write up more like a story. His wife take the story, submit it to the newspaper. And so then it gets published in like this article in the newspaper about his dad. Well, that parallels me because last year what I did, that helped me process my dad's death. So I wrote like a story. And I got a blog, I put it on Medium, but I posted it on Facebook. So I used to take a lot of writing classes with this lady that owned like a weekly paper here. So she saw it and like, hey, Tan, we should publish this. So the article about my dad got published the same way. I was like,
right? So you paid attention and you did what you felt inspired to do, right? Your original intention was to honor your father in some way, and being a writer, you gave you the opportunity to do so. And your sister says, yeah, let's do this.
That's precious. So it's like, and what I didn't realize, because I almost didn't post it, because I wrote it, I was writing it like right after, but I didn't post it till almost the end of the year. Because I'm like, well, everybody going through grief and I don't know, the holidays heavier for people. I'm like, I don't know. And it like, God, like, you need to post it. And I was like, okay. And I got some.
You need to get over yourself, right?
Yeah. And I got some in a response from people like, you know, either they knew my dad or they were dealing with a parent that was like sick or whatever. And so it's a story that I wish I didn't have right now, but I share it a lot because a lot of people are there. They've had that happen or it's about to happen to them. And that whole process of what does it look like after they're gone and how do you navigate that? I'm learning that over time. In like November was a whole gauntlet of anniversary dates to me because like, his death date was like November 5th. His funeral was on my birthday, which is November 13th.
Ah, Scorpio, eh?
Yeah. And then his
birthday. I thought you had some water in you because of the flow of our conversation, right?
Yeah. I love water. So the 22nd was his birthday, and then we had Thanksgiving. So like 4 dates in November to navigate through. And I made it through, but it was rough days. Some days were better than others, but the holiday, everything is different. And so you're just trying to adjust to the new version of you, because the version of you before they were gone is different than after they're gone. And it's kind of.
And you don't want that version to be smaller, you want it to be bigger, right?
Right.
Likewise, right.
Right.
And now, in this process, all right, so how do you navigate or help your counseling clients navigate through similar things? Are you able to fully open up and be with them from those inner places and engage them to do so as well? Or do you find that there's a bit of resistance in that still?
Well, for me, I haven't really been doing a lot of direct counseling work, and I've been trying to see how do I want to be present in, like, how do I want to define my work going forward?
That's a good thing.
So I don't really want to do direct one-on-one work. Not that I can't do it.
You certainly got the qualification to do so.
Yeah, I do. But I know the energy investment for me. So since we kind of talking about energy and all that, like I know I'm an empath. So because I'm an empath, I feel in ways that other people don't really understand, and things I absorb a lot of different energies. For a lot of my direct counseling career, I was working with people that had a lot of heavy issues, trauma, like sexual assault, all that. And so I'm like a sponge. I soak all that up. And even if I do things like self-care or whatever, it takes a lot longer for me to get a lot of that off of me.
Sure. And let me ask you about the process of that, since you mentioned it, right? Okay. The getting off. So once you've absorbed, and I found this for me as well, so this is why I'm asking the question. When you absorb that, what do you recognize in the process of navigating through it before you offer the feedback?
So what I usually tell people, and that's why it's more self-care for me.
Sure.
I'm not doing it, because in order for me to really do what I do best, I have to step into somebody else's experience and then tell them how they feel back to them. Because a lot of it is they're not aware of their feelings, or they can't put words to it.
I think that's the most important part, right? It's hard to articulate feelings because we haven't been taught the language in order to do so, first of all.
Right, right.
You know, back and to so, the education point.
Yeah, so for me, it's like, if I step into this, then I know I'm losing some energy that is not going to come back from the person I'm working with. And if I continue to work with multiple people, then I'm going to be at a deficit that I can't really balance back out, because you have to then do paperwork, you got all these other things around it. So for me, I want to think about it from like a creative standpoint or a teaching standpoint of how can I use story to teach things that would then give people tools, so then I can kind of be at a place where I can continue to keep myself balanced, but also give things to people that they wouldn't necessarily get in a traditional sense.
Sure.
Because it's a population of people that need intensive counseling, but it's also a population of people that are not in that space, but they need something too. And it's a larger population of those everyday people just need skills of just how to deal with everyday life. And so I don't want to do it from a head place where it's just like, this is what the statistics say. This, and not saying there's not room for that, but people connect to stories and what people have gone through, and then how that's been applied, and then the outcome of it. It's like, okay, you had this happen, you did this, whatever, you got a way to frame it. And for me, that's what I'm seeking more. Like, how can I do more of that? Whether it's writing or, you know, I want to do a podcast. I am going to do a podcast. Because everybody's been telling me, they've been getting on me and fussing at me, that I haven't got mine off the ground. But I really want to tell other people's stories in a way that it shows the value of everybody. Because all of us have a story, and yes, people need to hear our stories, because they will understand and relate to it more from us versus somebody that's like a celeb. Not saying that it's not value in celebrity stores or whatever, but people see people like me and you all the time, but they don't know the full story behind us. And then when they start to understand, like, well, that makes sense. That's why you're doing what you're doing, or say what you say, or whatever.
Right.
Because now it's all source material. So if I hadn't had the experiences I did, I won't be able to talk about what I talk about from a place of ease. I would be more like, how do I say this, and how do I make it sound good?
Well, you're coming from a much more empathic place, right? And in being able to and acknowledge our learning styles, right? We get visual, kinesthetic, and auditory. And so the storytelling, especially through podcasting, and I would encourage you to do so, gives people an experience that they can relate to. And they, you know, if they're visual learners, they can have the imagination, you know, cranking and seeing all the stuff. Or they can, if they're kinesthetic, they can feel the emotions that you're describing. And if they're auditory, maybe, you know, they'll have this scenery that's set up that they can relate to.
Yeah.
And I find that, especially in writers, good writers, especially, that creates an experience that people can actually just become, you know, it's like they become it, right? Mm-hmm. You step out of yourself and all of a sudden you're in this other world, and writing and reading and, you know, watching movies and things like that gives you the opportunity to do so and explore things you may not have had the opportunity to otherwise. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I didn't think we have
good for you.
Yeah, I think we just have a series of visual snapshots. Mm-hmm. And so what I've learned is that's how I best frame things. If I can get a visual and then wrap a story around it, that not only makes sense to me, it makes sense to the people that's listening to it, but it also gives them a cue. So when a certain event happened, they got the mental picture, they can pop back up.
Right. I remember somebody had that happen. So let's, you know, and it triggers, see, and this is the educational part, you know, where we have this database of others' experiences that relate to our own that we can reflect on and find our own way in it. Because it's never going to be the same as another. However, it does offer that support because you've got some information from which to draw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's what draws the connection. It's like, as I'm talking about a specific experience that has a visual for you. And it's like, but you might connect to it a different way.
Sure.
But then you get to put your story on top of my story. And so then it's like, you know, so
it's layer like cake, right?
It's like a tapestry. So we all weave together like this. You know, we all have our story connects to a greater story. And the more we tell it, then the more people can then connect and then put their story on top or be willing to share their story.
Right.
And for me, that's what I want to do more of now, because I think that's what people need more of, is not necessarily trying to fix themselves, but to understand what value their story has for them and for the people that they encounter.
Because and the fixing takes place automatically because you have that opportunity to observe, reflect, you have your own catharsis. You know, writing for me, and I've written a bunch of books and a lot of them about my own personal experience. So I've had those opportunities of catharsis. It just can be amazing. And yeah, whether it's writing or listening, those opportunities happen. And the fact that you mentioned that, you know, everybody, or not everybody, many have this desire to absorb stories and to reflect on stories and to share their stories, and they aren't necessarily encouraged to do so. There seems to be a trend in that now, especially with the virtual space and the digital world, it's much easier to do so. What I find that, and especially now as executive director for the Live and Let Live Foundation and Global Peace Movement, telling stories about how we can work together, about collaborating, about cooperation, about how we've found our connections with each other, and then talking about, we have two principles, right? Mm-hmm. Live and let live.
Mm-hmm.
Be a good human, don't be an aggressor. So the don't be aggressor side, that's a little tougher one, because our ultimate goal is to remove all vestiges of aggression in laws and legislation, mm-hmm. right? So the countries can't choose to go to war, right? We make it illegal.
Yeah.
Duh. So that's going to long term. Right? Somebody's got to do it. The other side of it, being a human, being a good human, gives us the opportunity to share these stories, to gather, to talk about the aspirations of being a good human, how we can embody those, how can we share those, and how we can grow together. We even incorporated a social enterprise component that gives people the opportunity. We turn volunteers into earners, right? Can't have peace in poverty. So we're flipping that notion, and we've got a couple of beta versions in process now so that we can detail it to the point where it's almost idiot proof, right? Here's the script you follow. We're hand holding you from a distance, which is what you're talking about in telling the stories and being able to share your own special sauce with those that connect with you and are connected to you through this wonderful water that you have.
Yeah.
Not, it's all energetic. It's vibratory. So the frequencies are attracted to you that are similar that need to hear you.
Right. And it's just like what you say with water. And I always like to kind of frame stuff with water because, you know, when you're thirsty, you kind of seek out water and you got to go to a place to get it. Mm-hmm. And where I get my water and where you get your water might be two totally different things, because what you need replenished might not be the same thing I need replenished. So our thirst can be. But one thing you said too, and that's one thing I've really been focusing on for myself, is not how can I be a good person, how can I be a better human? And I think those are two totally different things too.
because we share a planet. We essentially, even though we have a lot of outer indicators that we're different, right? We really aren't.
No, we really aren't. But and I had this conversation with my neighbor. So he owns a tattoo shop. So like my apartment's above him. Where I stay. And so we didn't have these like real cool conversations over the past couple of years. But if you see him, you see me, and you like, how y'all know each other? Like, because people want to put that together. But what people have to realize is you miss important like nuggets and insight from people, because they might not look like you, they might not come from where you come from, they might not have some of the same beliefs as you do. But if you open yourself up to expanding your not even your social circle, but your ability to connect with different types of people.
Right. I've participated in a bunch of different groups, and there's this phrase, two phrases that keep coming up: psychologically safe and intellectually humble. The psychologically safe means that you feel safe enough to be vulnerable, right? So there's created spaces. That's not everywhere, and it certainly isn't in public, right?
Right.
And then the intellectual humility side of it is being able to listen and connect with someone that's got a vastly different experience,
right,
other than you, without judgment.
Right. And that's the big piece too, because I think we look at people and say, well, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't say things like that, but that's not you. You know, it's like
different people.
But I've learned so many things, and I've seen so many pictures of the world, because I connect to people, you know, locally, but I've also connected people virtually that's in different parts of the world. They got different, you know, not just what they do, but like their passions and what they really care about and all that, and hearing these different stories. So I've become more informed, and I've grown, not just from my own personal work, but the people I've connected with and the stories they've told me. And then they've connected things to me, or they've inspired me to do more things, or they gave me a different perspective on something that I didn't even know of. And they're like, oh, I never thought about that. That's cool. You know, so for me, I think, because I'm a lifelong learner, like I love learning, but I don't want to go back to school. I don't want no more school.
Be curious, right? There are many who have not gone through the educational systems, and their curiosity has led them to really phenomenal places as a result.
Yeah.
Essential.
Yeah. So I just want, yeah.
I do whether it's curious about life, about yourself, about your connection, you know, that curiosity will, as long as you have it, it will eventually lead you to that place. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, I could be wrong, but I think a strong curiosity brings you into a different perspective in life that gives you opportunity to learn stuff that you never thought you would.
Mm-hmm. Right? And I think from my, like, changing how I perceive myself, instead of trying to, like, oh, well, let me inform myself so I can be more of an expert, I want to be more of a student. Like, how can I remain a student in life? A student about myself, a student about other people, a student about the world, so I never feel like I have all the answers.
Ask questions, you know how to shut up, right? And that's the one thing that we've got problems with, right? We ask questions, and then we want to answer them with the thinking we already have, mm-hmm. right? And that doesn't work. Because that's otherwise we wouldn't have the questions. Well, who was Einstein said you can't solve the problems with the same thinking that created them. So we got to learn how to be quiet. And that's where that pause and reflect opens you up to that inner voice you were talking about earlier, whether you call it God, guide, angel, ally, it really doesn't matter. You know, there's thousands of names for it, of which we all may find agreement, but probably won't, right?
Yeah.
And yet, yeah. It comes from that same place of just pure energy and wanting to be helpful, right? You ask a question, it's because you want to grow.
Right, right. And it, so I want to mention this because you said it earlier and before I forget it. So before I moved, I quit my teaching job. So I taught between adjunct and faculty for like 7 years. Mm. And I decided to quit. Well, not decided. I knew it was time for me to leave. I was always trying to get confirmation from God. Like, okay.
Seven's a perfect number. So you were in a perfect order in that place, right?
Yeah. So I ended up quitting my job. So after I quit, what I would see every day, and it happened for months, I would see 11:11 every day. Mm. So I would see it early. And then if I stayed up late, and it wasn't like me trying to force it, I would just look up at 11:11. And then it started being other numbers. So it might be 111, 222, 333, or whatever. So like all these repeating numbers.
The universe is built on math and science. You know, it's connected. So it's interesting how even these, you know, those serendipitous moments, right? Where you're just, your open consciousness, your awareness is attracted. Mm-hmm. And so there are these signs that you've opened yourself up to be able to perceive, first of all, and just acknowledge that, yeah, they're signs. You don't necessarily know exactly what they mean. However, right. They mean at a simple level that there's a greater connection happening.
Right. And so that was encouragement for me. Like, okay, I don't know how this is going to play out, but I'm on the right track. Like, I'm on the right track. And one thing I want to mention too about, you know, how do I, you know, process things or whatever. I try, and it started when my dad was sick too. He had just got better and I just needed a break because I was pretty much a caretaker for a long time too. So I went to one of the state parks and did a solo retreat. So I took my journal, took my Bible, took a couple books, and I just was I don't think the first time I had a cabin, but I was kind of like at a state park. And I just was by myself. I just let, you know, the people that need to know where I was know about, like, look, I won't be answering the phone or whatever. I let you know when I get there, and I let you know when I'm on
time.
Yeah. And so I just like put my phone, I cut it off. Well, I put on like do not disturb. I really didn't try and watch a lot of TV or be on my phone. I just allow myself to do whatever I need to do, whether it was journal or if I needed to just sleep or whatever. And so it's something that I try and do. At least twice a year, I'm overdue. one since I moved. I haven't really had one in 2 years, and so I know I need to have one. So hopefully I'll be able to do one while I'm here in the house, at least for like a day or two. But that's like my reset button. Mm-hmm. So a lot of those answers that I seek or questions that I have, they get answered when I do solo retreats. And it come fast. It's just like, why did I, was I able to get these answers? But it's when you...
Well, yeah, there's no distractions there.
Right.
Right. When you're in the everyday living experience, there are so many, and I don't want to say that they're distractions, and yet from the core level, they are.
Right.
And you're paying attention to those. Mm-hmm. So you're not able to get to that place of quiet and stillness that you can by yourself. And sometimes it takes a little bit to get there.
Yeah, it does. But it's every time I've done it, it's always been like at a shifting point or something, like a question that I need to answer, or kind of like perspective or the courage to like make a decision that I need to make. I've been putting off. So I know for me now it's okay. I've had, you know, a section of my life where it was all about achieving, and I did that. I climbed the ladder. I did all the stuff I could pretty much do in counseling. But now it's like, okay, what's my life work? And what does that look like for this next phase of my life? And starting to lay the groundwork for that. Because I know what I've done in the past, that was for, you know, particular people, for particular things and reasons. But this is a not a broader, it's a deeper work. And that's still coming to me. One piece that I think the beginning of it is something that I've been wanting to do for a while. I've been researching our like genealogy, our family history for a while. So I really, really want to get to the point where I know exactly where we came from, like what country, all that. And then I want to go and meet my ancestors and be on our land and actually meet them and document it and write it and whatever.
That's an amazing journey in and of itself. And I'm kind of envious, right? But you know a little bit about me. I wasn't able to do that. It wasn't until, I got remarried in 2017. And my wife, my first Christmas present was an Ancestry subscription. That was in 2017. 2019, in January, my half-sister shows up. Biological half-sister, which led me to my mother. And so we went and spent a week with her that summer. She's passed now, 2 years ago. And I think I was the last item on her bucket list, right? She just had to make that connection. I have two other half, I've got a half sister, 4 years older, and a half brother, 4 years younger. And the interesting thing about it is you want to talk about miraculous events in one's life. I met my birth father here in Phoenix at a UFO conference in 1989, did not know it. I even spent the weekend with him in Prescott. He invited me up. We had had that kind of connection where, and I don't know if he thought about it or not. We didn't have that conversation. And it wasn't until then that I found out, oh gosh, you know, my desire of meeting my parents actually took place much earlier than I thought. And there was another weird one. So it made me feel that much more comfortable in all the weirdness that I experienced. And yet it was short-lived because he passed in 2017. I was looking forward to reconnecting with him. So he passed the same year that I got the Ancestry subscription. So being able to, my point is being able to research your history and find your roots is really important. And yet, is it?
Right? Yeah.
On that personal level, it's something, okay, I got to trace my history. What about your future? Which you're talking about now is, okay, you know, where's my life passions and my purpose leading me to? Well, I feel like I got to go back in my history first to discover this stream of who I am, and then go into the future with renewed whatever from that experience. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I think the way I look at the past is a little different, but I think it's, and me and my cousin had this conversation too. It's like you get to a point where you feel like it's a piece missing and you can't really put your finger on it, but you know, it's like, it's something about me I don't know. And I think the reason why it's come back up to me now is because I lost my dad. And so it's like, okay, I lost him, and not lost in like, oh, he's not around me, but it's like, okay, it prompts me to do it more, because one thing that I was planning on doing before he passed was to sit down and have him tell me his story. Like, I really didn't know a whole lot about him growing up. So that's one thing I like. I really wanted to just sit down with him before, you know, before it's his time, and just ask him, like, well, how was it when you growing up, and what did it, and ask him those things, because I didn't know the whole thing. And so I think maybe me going back and tracing the family stuff is like me wanting to kind of get that piece that I didn't get before he passed too.
Yeah, for sure. But I know it was for me, especially with the weird stuff that happened throughout my life. I just always wondered, was there somebody in my lineage that had these kinds of things that I could possibly meet, talk to, get mm-hmm. some solace from, right? Mm-hmm. Because I felt so alone, not necessarily abandoned, because my life was rich, right? Yeah. There was that part of me that was just alone and yep. couldn't find connection until I got older. Now, that brings up another question: that do you find that there are periods of maturation cycles, if you will, where, you know, as we get older, that we reflect more
mm-hmm.
and get more curious in other directions than we had when we were younger, because we didn't necessarily have the questions about them yet, because we didn't have an experience to provoke the question, right?
Yeah.
So do you find that something that is consistent in how you've gone through the counseling realms and the reflections, the conversations you had with clients, as well as your relatives from what you've talked about?
Yeah, I think for me, you know, purpose and career and all that has kind of been something I weave through all of the work that I've done, because I've done, like, I worked at a career center before, so I did a lot of career fairs and career coaching. Then I did a lot of teaching other counselors or whatever, trying to help them figure out like their style, mm-hmm. and did a lot of community mental health. So I did a lot of home visits and, you know, stuff in the schools and working with adolescents.
Of course, being a water sign too, did you find that as you were doing this, that you were reflecting on yourself quite a bit internally as well?
Yeah. So I think for me, what I realized is at every stage, like whatever was going on with me, I then got clients that came with the same thing. So like when my grandfather passed, I had a lot of clients that had grief. I worked with the kids.
Funny how the universe works that, no?
Yeah. Like when I worked with the kids, a lot of them had issues with their dad. When I was when I was teaching, I had a lot of students that had bosses that were like, oh, they worked in toxic work environments, which I worked in toxic work environments before. So I know how that is and how to navigate it. So I think now in my life, I'm at a point where it's like I've been serious for a long span of my life. I've had to be a lot more mature than my age. And I'm to a point now in my life, I want to enjoy life. And I think Yeah. And I'm reverting back to the things that I kind of let go of, which is kind of like my creative side, the writing side, me wanting to travel and explore and meet people and all that. Because I was locked down, you know, in the pandemic for a while. I was pretty much a care Tiger for years. And then I was in school for years too. So it's like either I was taking care of somebody in school, working all the time. I was like, I don't want that type of life now going forward. Not saying I won't get busy or I won't have multiple things to do, but I want energizing work. I want things that feed me.
That's interesting that you say that, and more power to you for that. The pandemic gave all of us the opportunity to be still, to self-reflect, to figure out what life's about or the next phase, because coming out of this, life is going to be totally different. So why not make it the life that you desire and that feels consistent with your inner child, right? As opposed to this prescriptive path,
right?
From a false narrative.
Yeah.
So I totally empathize with what you're going through. And I believe, and that's part of the reason why I started this podcast, is that I know others have gone through this. They've and are able to articulate their reflections just as you have, in being able to share their stories and help others who are going through the same thing still.
It
gives us all that sense of we are one big family.
One world,
right?
Yeah. So I think that's why what I realized being in that role of always thinking you have to be the person to help, it makes you a lot less vulnerable, because then you're like, oh, if I'm a therapist or I'm a professor or whatever, or I got people looking up to me or they're trying to emulate me. And so then I have to be a certain version of me.
Right. You're in your head real thinking about what you need to be, as opposed to being in your heart and your gut and feeling your way through who you are.
Right. Right. And so it was, I still got some video clips from like when I was teaching and all that. And even when we was in school, like we were taught a certain way to talk and sit and whatever. It's like a counselor, like sit in posture and how you talk and communicate in the words you say. And I got to the point where I realized that that was for a season, but that was a version of me that is not this me now. And so with that, it was a relearning of, okay, well, this no longer fits me. It's kind of like what I always compare it to. It's kind of like trying on clothes that don't fit anymore. Or it's like you look at like this, I was wearing that back then. I don't even like this. This don't even feel right. Let me take some more comfortable. And I think that's what I've been doing over
the other face of tea, right?
It's like, I don't like, because I, if you were interviewing me about 5 years ago, I probably would have had a dress shirt on. I would have, I would have had a whole different look. But now I'm more comfortable being me in every setting. And however that goes, I let it go. I don't really have a script or exactly what I'm gonna say when I get on. I just, usually I pray before I get on, like, okay, well, whatever you want me to say, I'm saying.
Well, I told you before, we start out with a couple of questions. I have no idea where it's gonna go. We're gonna have some fun.
No, it just goes where it's supposed to go. So what I'm embracing, even though it's not the easiest thing, sometimes you get a little not scary. It's just unpredictable what.
Well, I think fear enters in, to be honest, right? Let's be honest. It does for me sometimes, and it's unwarranted.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's self-created.
Right.
And, in the inner world, there is no fear, and perfect love has no fear. Right. So to come from that place as a human being, we're talking about growing into, the best human you can be. That's a place of fearlessness and vulnerability that we all can ascribe and aspire to.
Yeah. Yeah. because it's a more like welcoming and kind of warmer versions of us. I think when we try and like shrink down, it makes us a little more cold and more like shut off and more calculated in how we talk and what and all that. And so I just been learning to embrace it more and, you know, embrace the possibilities and just how things happen, like how I'm on here. Cause I know you sent me the invite. I was like, I don't even know how he got there. I don't even know how he saw a profile or something. I don't even know how that happened.
Magic. I pay attention and I follow the promptings, right? I never know. It's just in there subtle. Sometimes they're a little more than subtle. However, mm-hmm. I know there's always something there, and this has been just an amazing conversation. So in closing out, there's a, I want to know, what kind of advice would you offer to others that might be listening to this to help them in their journey on a daily basis, yeah, from moment to moment, as the case may be?
So for me, this is kind of what I've embraced, especially now in the latter part of this year, is I don't have all the answers, and I'm being okay with that. And whatever I thought my journey was, it's shifting and changed. And so for me, I was always looking for the destination. Like, okay, I have this much time and I'm, you know, getting this degree, getting this accomplishment, whatever. And I was so goal oriented. And now I just realized I'm going to continuously be on this journey. It's always going to be a next thing, a next evolution, a next thing to grow into. And so I embrace, like, I'm not there yet and I'm okay with that. And we all just not there. We still all trying to be better people. We all, you know, have the best intentions sometimes, and we slip up, or we might take one step and go two steps back, but that's how we learn. And so I think giving ourselves more grace to be human and not think that we had to be perfect and have it all together. Okay. And I think that's the best message I can give to people, is that you are where you're supposed to be, but also this is not the end for you, even if it's not the best scenario for you. You're still learning. So once you learn what you need to learn, the next path, the next door, or whatever will appear. So
awesome advice, Terrence. And I love the tea, right? this has been an amazing conversation, and I'm sure it's going to be one that our audience will enjoy. And I thank you so much for the opportunity and for being willing to say yes.
Yeah, I appreciate the invite. I've enjoyed it. It's been a great conversation.
Awesome. Thank you. And namaste and in Lakech. Thanks for sticking with us for this episode of One World in a New World. I'm Zen Benefiel, your host, and I will see you next time.